You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
A jam-packed show for you guys here on today's Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow the show on Twitter and on Instagram at LockedOnPHXSuns. You can follow me on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Today, I'm going to break down the latest with regard to the Suns and the coronavirus situation across the NBA. Want to debrief you on what is going on in the Western Conference from a Suns perspective and where they stack up. And to close the show, I have a few mailbag questions that some of the listeners of the show have emailed and direct messaged me, so I wanted to shout them out and answer some of those to close things out. We'll talk center prospects. We will talk some fun stuff, some different sorts of questions outside of the late game or execution woes that the Suns are experiencing. But first, if you are a first-time listener, welcome into the show. We are here every single morning for you in your feed Monday through Friday. If you are a returning listener, welcome back, and go ahead and give that five-star review on Apple Podcasts. Everyone, hit the follow or the subscribe button wherever you are listening. And for those who are new, I am Brendan Kleen. Once again, I cover the NBA and the Phoenix Suns at Forbes, Dime Magazine, and at SB Nation, which means that not only do you come here for the latest Suns rumors, analysis, and news, but you come here to see how things fit into the broader context of the NBA. And that is where our conversation starts today. I'm recording this Tuesday night as we watch another day of NBA action be affected by the virus and another game, Chicago-Boston, be postponed because Boston cannot field an eight-man roster. So I want to give you a few of my thoughts, but mostly the four things that I think are being underestimated and under-discussed that aren't being talked about enough when it comes to this situation. But first, I just wanted to highlight, when we talk about a game being postponed, and the fact that we're at about a week stretch here, it feels like, where at least one game has been postponed or made a mockery of, at the very least, like the Philly game last week where they had seven guys playing. That was like a sort of crisis or, at the very least, a meme for these other leagues, right? The MLB, when we saw the Marlins miss whatever a couple weeks of games that they missed, that was like, is MLB smart to keep this going? What are they doing here? Why would they try this? And should they shut it all down? The Marlins are such an embarrassment to sports and society and all of this. There were other teams. The Cardinals, I think, had their fair share of struggles, and some of that was reasonable. I think the Tennessee Titans deserved some mockery with how they handled this virus. I think that the Jacob Turner situation in the World Series was clearly a mistake. The fact that the NFL came down hard on the Oakland Raiders, on the Vegas Raiders, was smart. But what I wanted to highlight is all those situations felt like almost earth-shattering, right? It was like, how could they be so ignorant of the rules that the league put in place and that the players agreed to let it get to this point? And we're at a situation in the NBA where that's every night. That's regular. That's a normal. That's Tuesday as we're recording now. Like, we've gotten to this point so quickly where it's just accepted that this league is delaying and postponing games, and that there's nights where I made fun of sort of the Philly game last week, but right now, tonight, they win a game 137-134 in overtime where Isaiah Joe, a second-round pick, played 37 minutes. They played Mike Scott, 46 minutes. Danny Green takes 25 shots. And on the other side, the Heat don't have any of their players. Bam Adebayo is out. Jimmy Butler is out. Goran Dragic is out. And you're seeing a guy, Max Struss, or Chris Silva, or Gabe Vincent, who was their starting point guard tonight, play 36 minutes. It's silly. These games are not competitive. This is the Broncos game where they didn't have a quarterback every night. Every night across the league, we're seeing these games, and every team in the league is going to go through a Marlins type of a situation. So it just sit back and kind of take in the fact that the NBA, in my opinion, is failing right now. They're failing to field a season that's competitive, entertaining, or safe for the people involved. And all of that is true, and all of that needs to change. They met today, the Board of Governors, the team governors across all 30 teams to reinforce and make more strict some of the rules in place, and hopefully that makes a difference. But when we talk, though, about the season and whether it should have happened, whether it should continue to happen, I think here are the four things that to me do need to be taken into consideration. Because while all of that is true, and while all of that is embarrassing for the league, and while all of that to me represents a failure, the reality is that there needed to be some sort of happy medium. There needed to be something. And what's wrong right now is that the NBA is just not cutting it. They're not creating an environment that's safe enough. But I've also heard a lot of just bad faith arguments about a bubble. Why didn't we do a bubble? Why are these owners so greedy? It's all about the money. And a lot of that's just not really reasonable. And so here's the first one, guys. The first one, and I have to give credit to Caitlin Cooper, who writes about the Pacers over at Indie Cornrows on SB Nation. She pointed out that we might not see any sort of major changes here until Martin Luther King Day, which is 6 days from now, 5 days from when you're hearing this. It's on the 18th, because that would be an admission on the part of the league that date, the initial start date that the league was looking at, would have been the right one, or a better one at the very least. And that's a very keen observation by Caitlin, I think, because that would have been clearly better, right? We saw a rushed situation in which I think the protocols were not developed thoroughly enough. Guys were not in shape. I mean, that's unrelated to the virus in some ways, but it just feels like it was very haphazardly put together, and we're seeing the blowback now. So that's number one is 1 month later, and they were still talking about fitting in a full-ish season starting in January. It's not too far from when they started, but that extra month I feel like would have been valuable, and it just pushes everything back a month because this vaccine and everything else would have rolled out the same timeline. It's just the NBA wouldn't have started quite so early. Number two is this is not like the NCAA. I've heard a lot of people basically saying, you know, it's exploitative of these athletes. It's just unprofessional and immoral to be playing games right now. And it feels like those arguments are just repackaged and repurposed from college sports, college basketball, college football to the NBA. And I saw it with the NFL and MLB. Those are obviously not leagues I cover, but these are professional people who agreed to do this. They didn't have to. They could have bartered harder. They could have pressured the league to change things, to be more strict, whatever. Now, does every single player involved have their finger on the pulse of these very detailed descriptions? No. I mean, George Hill today said he's basically not going to follow these more strict guidelines that the Board of Governors agreed to today. So I don't think that every player is like sort of responsible here, but as a union, as a collective, they had negotiating power. They chose to play. I don't think it's the same as saying that they're being taken advantage of in some way. I think that they need to come together with the league. The league needs to be not as afraid to be firm if it means safety and a more secure season, a more real season, which this doesn't feel like right now. And the players maybe need to take more attention to the real realities here, because they do have bargaining power. They are getting paid. They are partners in this league to some degree, and way more than college and way more than most other pro leagues. That brings me to number three, which is the bubble. I've had a lot of family members even talk to me about a bubble because they know that I care about the NBA and cover it. And I've told them the same thing that I'm about to tell you, which is the players didn't want a bubble. You read any story, you listen to any interview on the NBA or WNBA side, a bubble was not an option. A full season bubble was not something the players were ever going to do. It was taxing on their mental health. It was taxing on their social well-being, just their mood, their temperament, their mental health to be stowed away and away from the rest of the world for as long. I'm sure many of you can relate to that, but imagine it even more strictly and for longer. And the other thing is the NBA probably couldn't have afforded to pull that off. The bubble costs billions of dollars, and to do it over 8-10 months or whatever it would have been all said and done, that's just unrealistic on both sides. I don't think either side really wanted it. I think it's still an option for the playoffs, and obviously there was some sort of in between that could have worked in terms of regional bubbles or division bubbles that the league talked about that were sort of bandied about when the negotiations were happening in November and December. But the reality is it didn't ultimately come to be, because I don't think either side could really make that happen. The other thing is, the fourth thing is, of course, it's about the money, but it's about the players' money too here. They want the money. Again, they agreed to this. They, sure, are they on the front lines of this? Yes. Is, you know, if Devin Booker gets COVID, or if the Suns have to lose games because too many players have COVID, is Robert Sarver directly going to be impacted? I guess not. You know, it's not dissimilar from some workplaces around the country, and that the guys on the front line are going to bear the brunt of this. But I don't really buy into that too much. I feel like, you know, if the players really came together and didn't want to play, this season would not have happened. They need this money, and they understood the financial realities, and that is what made this season happen. But what I did want to draw attention to right before we close here is a report from November 21st by Shams Charania, detailing something that I think got completely ignored on November 21st, again, that by December 1st, this was the deadline for NBA players to let the league know that they would be opting out of the 2020-21 season. Nobody did it. Nobody opted out, as far as I can find. I mean, we would have heard about it. I don't know of any single player who chose not to play this season. That's insane. I mean, it's crazy. Like, we saw how many players do that in baseball and in football. We saw, you know, how many college players get ready for the draft rather than playing, or step aside halfway through the year, or whatever their purpose was. And for college players, maybe the decision's a little easier, especially guys on the cusp of the draft. But no NBA player opted out of this thing. So they had countless opportunities. I don't know what I don't know what the financial circumstances for those players would have been. In the NFL, it was not a ton of money, but they did get paid in part, if I'm remembering correctly. The NBA, I would imagine, would have been something similar. So I don't say that lightly, like they all should have opted out, but that was not an option anybody took. It's just worth considering that the players are not as much of a victim of this as much as a partner in it. And that will be key as we figure out how to get out of this through the next few weeks in the NBA. The players and the governors did this together, and they will have to figure it out together. Okay, after this, a quick, you know, we'll sort through how the Western Conference looks for the Phoenix Suns. But first, who is ready for some football? College football playoff national championship game wrapped up last night, but the NFL divisional round is ahead. Another weekend full of NFL football, and the playoffs are still around for a month or so. More football. There's only one place that has you covered for all of it, and only one place we trust here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and that is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, the name of our network, for a 50% welcome bonus. Again, double your money with that welcome bonus. Here is your BetOnline bet of the day, courtesy of yours truly. The Charlotte Hornets are 4-point underdogs at home against the Dallas Mavericks on Wednesday. The money line, the Dallas is favored to win. They are minus 175 to win the game. Charlotte's been playing well. I think they've won four in a row, or they have won four of their past five. LaMelo Ball's playing out of his mind, earning more minutes. Dallas is either going to be welcoming Kristaps Porzingis back into the lineup or potentially not playing many guys in this game. This is one that could be in jeopardy of being postponed, but if it's played, Charlotte could outright win this thing at home, let alone give four. So that's mine. Go find yours. BetOnline has everything that you need. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive that 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Back here, recapping so far the Western Conference as it pertains to the Suns, who currently, you know, despite all of the hand-wringing here, are in a good spot. At 7-4, the Suns are tied for second in the Western Conference, tied with Utah and the Clippers. As we sit here as well on Tuesday night, about halfway through the game action on Tuesday, the Warriors, I think, are the only Western Conference team actually still playing. Here is where we stand with Western Conference teams in the top 10 of net rating. It's actually fairly well split right now among Eastern and Western Conference teams, despite the fact that the West usually is dominant here. Milwaukee, LA, the Lakers, Atlanta third, Brooklyn fourth, Dallas fifth, Utah sixth, then Phoenix, Boston, Indiana, and Denver, rounding out the top 10 in net rating. So the Suns are right there at seventh. It's all fairly congested right now, starting at about four from Brooklyn all the way down to 10 where Denver is. It's a pretty sizable cluster right there. So not a lot of wiggle room. And that's tends to be how things are. Net rating is, you know, on the margins, point here, a point there. But the Suns are seventh in offense and 15th in defense right now. That defense has really slipped, especially disappointing to see that having played against inferior competition. Detroit and Washington being the reason that your defensive rating slips is disappointing, I'm sure, for Suns fans out there. But what I wanted to highlight too here is kind of who's rising and who's falling lately in the NBA. So where the Lakers have been all year is right at the very top. Behind them, the Jazz, winners of their last three games, as are the Trailblazers, and we know Golden State's been on a run. Dallas has won their past three as well. Everybody's sort of surging after being a very... Zach Lowe joked about it on his podcast, and I was noticing the same thing, looking at the standings from a Suns perspective. Everyone was 500 for a while, and that's finally broken up. So we're seeing a little bit of a hierarchy develop. The Lakers seem like they are the odds-on favorites to cruise to the number one seed and be the favorites and a rested favorite heading into the playoffs again, barring injury to Davis or James. But once again, just like last year, where the Suns are showing themselves to be quite promising is overall point differential. This is actually something the Suns were strong in last year. Last year, the Suns should have been a playoff team based solely on point differential, but they weren't great in tight games. They lost to teams that they shouldn't have, and especially at home, did not take care of business. I believe they had a 17-22 home record heading into the bubble last year. I don't think that includes the bubble games, but it might, which would be a little bit silly, but obviously they won all of them anyway. So point differential this year, the Suns are plus 3.8, which just means very simple, not net rating, not per 100 possessions, flat out, how much do they outscore their opponents by every single night? They average basically a 4-point win every night. Now we've seen, you know, losing by 21 to Washington is going to balance that out, but then beating New Orleans by almost 20 or so is going to balance it out on the other side. All things considered, the Suns are very steadily, consistently outscoring their opponent over the course of the season. That's the good thing, right? The Lakers are plus 9 point differential per night. That's just enormous and sort of crazy. They're second only to the Bucks in the East. But in the West, the Suns are in third in that number. And Dallas is the only team ahead of them besides LA. So that's a good sign. That shows what we've seen, which is that they've had some clunkers, the Suns have, but it hasn't been too damning for them to the point where there's something to really struggle at, so or to really worry about. So LA, Dallas, Utah, and Portland are surging. The Suns have evened out a little bit. They're 2-2 in their last four games, but they have three straight home games to get back in business here, and I think they should be able to. Atlanta is in a little bit of a weird spot right now. Let's see. They won their game against that depleted Atlanta or depleted Philadelphia team on Monday night, but they have been going through some chemistry stuff, some injuries of their own with Bogdan Bogdanovic going out and some of their additions not even really entering the fold quite yet. Danilo Gallinari, Rajon Rondo, Chris Dunn, all of those guys still dealing with injuries and haven't really gotten healthy at all yet. So Atlanta should be winnable. The Warriors are a beatable team, and the Pacers rematch. We saw the Suns dominate that matchup. It could happen again. So the Suns are on a good track. It's not anything to necessarily worry about too much, but we know that they have been very inconsistent, and the margin for error remains just very, very thin in this Western Conference. It's just not a place where you can go 500 for too long and stay at the top of the conference. They just need to pile up wins, as Chris Paul has said over and over. Okay, closing out the show with mailbag questions from my email and my Twitter inbox to say a little thank you to those folks who have stayed engaged that way. But first, Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. My new pack, as I told you guys about, is waiting in my mailbox at my parents' house because that is where it got sent. But I can't wait to dig in. There's the 12 original flavors, including double chocolate and peanut butter, two of my favorites, as well as the six new ones, like cookies and cream, which I have not tried, but always just sounds incredible, as well as carrot cake. I'm a big carrot cake guy, but all of these are covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, and as always, low calorie, low sugar, and high protein. They're great for anyone trying to lose or maintain weight, or if you're just health conscious and you want to put the right types of things into your body. For instance, that cookies and cream that I was drooling over, 617 grams of protein, only 130 calories, a perfect mid-afternoon snack, a perfect post-workout power-up, whatever you need. And right now, while supplies last, Built Bar is also offering a free cooler with purchase for every single purchase that you make, only at BuiltBar.com, and only when you use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, the name of our network, to get that 20% off your order, as well as that free cooler. Again, 20% off at BuiltBar.com when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Closing the show out here with a question from Farhad to begin with, which is, do you think there are any immediate concerns for this roster to begin looking for and possibly trading for, whether that's a backup combo guard or a legit backup center? I don't think the guard thing is much of a problem to start. I would say we're already seeing that Javon Carter and Langston Galloway can hardly get minutes when Campaign has been healthy. The Suns have been playing like an eight-man plus rotation, to kind of put it that way, like eight guys who are the core rotation in the starters plus Šarić, Cam, and Cam, and then Carter and Galloway squeaking in, usually with less than 10 minutes a night. So no, I don't think that there's a guard need, but I think, as I talked about with Brandon on Monday, which you guys should check out, Mondays with Zona, scroll down those feeds and find that. What I talked about with him is that they do need, I think, another center, an upgrade on the Damian Jones spot in the rotation. That is a need, I think. I think every team just needs a player there, somebody who is a more of a traditional five, a defensive-minded five-man who can fill some minutes and affect the game if there's like a matchup. I gave the example of in the playoffs last year. We saw the Lakers actually go back into their bench and play Dwight Howard and, to a lesser extent, JaVale McKee a little bit just to defend Nikola Jokic. They just needed a body, some fouls to burn, some defensive first guys, like I said, to do that. The Suns have that need. Damian Jones is not trustworthy. He fouls a lot, uncoordinated, unaware. I don't like to be so blunt about guys, but he's been in the league for long enough that I think that's just who he is. And the Suns didn't guarantee his contract for a reason. So I think it's in February or March sometime. I would not imagine that they will secure that guarantee for him. And they will be on the market for a center. The two guys that come to mind from a trade perspective to me right now would be JaVale McGee, who I've talked about a ton. He's probably more of a buyout guy. I don't know if there's really a trade that makes a ton of sense. I mean, Abdel Nader and like a future second round pick, maybe that's sort of the type of thing you would look at. Just end of the roster, switcheroo there. The other guy that I think makes some sense is Tony Bradley, who was just traded from Utah to Philadelphia on draft night, I believe, but doesn't really have a place in Philly's rotation with Joel Embiid and Dwight Howard, clearly the one and two at the center spot for those, for that team. So Bradley is a really just never caught on a rotation, but as a body there. I liked him at North Carolina. I don't think he's shown anything terrible in the NBA. He could just be somebody you could throw out there on a night where there is foul trouble or just to give the starters and Ayton some burn or some rest, rather. The last one to me in that mold, a sort of backup reserve center option, would be Gorgui Dieng, who I believe finally is at the end of his highly paid and albatross type of contract. Dieng is exactly what you really would want. I mean, he's maybe not as big as some of these other guys. He's a little bit undersized, but has the experience. We know he can play some defense. We know he's a veteran player. You know, that's three guys. I don't know if I love any of them, but honestly, like, you can be scraping in the G League after this G League showcase that the Suns are not participating in. We could see some guys impress there. We could see there's still some free agents like Dwayne Dedman on the market. I believe Tyson Chandler is still on the market, but that's sort of where I would be looking. Last question in this mailbag segment comes from @SunderousDunks on Twitter, who I know is a longtime listener, a very engaged listener. He messaged me on Twitter. I also know, Sundarus, you love my belief and my opinion about DeAndre Ayton, so you are very, very welcome for that. But in reality, let's hit this question. He asked, how much has Monty staggered Book and CP? And then he correctly notes that it's been a lot of staggering. Yes, it has. And the question is, Monty didn't seem to trust Cam Payne to be the full-time backup point guard, but Payne has played very well. So should Monty stagger less, the same, or more? It's a very good question. I mean, I think we've seen it not really... it's not a super aggressive stagger. Like, until Payne missed the past two games, we didn't really see subs where Paul would come in for Booker. Like, straight up, these guys never play together outside of the open and close of games. I guess the beginning of the first half, the beginning of the second half, and then the very end of the fourth quarter. That's been the rotation the past couple because Payne's not been in there. But most of the time, you know, we're seeing those guys play plenty together where the beginning of the game, and then again at the end of the second half, or the end of the first half, beginning of the second half, and in the fourth quarter. Like, a fairly standard for starters, right? And especially for two creators, like, that's probably how you should do it. And so, with Payne playing well, Monty's been empowered to do that. We see a lot of minutes where Payne and Booker are playing together. And so, I just personally feel like you still want one of those guys to be on the floor. It's not so much about staggering or not staggering, because what the real problem is needing a creator on the floor at all times. And does that need to be Booker as the other one opposite Paul, or can it be Payne? And so what you're seeing more so is you're getting Booker to be playing with another creator at all times, and that's been a really big value. And so that also allows you, by continuing to sort of stagger them a little bit, their minutes aren't entirely married to one another, is that you can buy minutes for guys like Galloway and Carter, which is who we've seen play with Paul the most, because they have a incredible elite Hall of Fame level point guard next to them. So I think the balance is actually working really well. I don't have the data necessarily on how much those two have played together versus not and how that's changed. I know that right now they're actually playing really poorly when they're on the floor together, and that's just obviously indicative of the entire starting lineup, which I dug in a lot to in my Wizards recap show. So check that out just below in your feed as well. I dug into why Paul and Booker are just a little worse than expected, why that's holding the team back a little bit, and what might change in the starting lineup. So that's where I really dug into that. But as it relates to these guys, yeah, they're not playing well together. And the lineups that Monty can create when either of them are on the floor without the other actually are working pretty well and make sense logically. And from a offense and defense standpoint, both sides seem to be functioning fairly well, even though they do go pretty small when it's just Paul. They go like Paul Carter Galloway a lot. That's very small, but it works. And so I don't have a problem with how it's working right now. And when Penn comes back, like, he'll get his 20 or so minutes. He's very, very, I mean, he might be the best backup point guard in the league so far in that type of role, not overextending himself and playing alongside Booker often. And so that's helping him. The other guys are finding ways to impact the game when they're on the court together and on the court without the other, the stars, I mean. I don't have a problem with it at all. I think the bigger rotation questions are in the front court. I think Jay Crowder could be getting the hook here. I think Dario Saric needs more minutes. That's where I would be looking. I don't think the staggering or the pain factor is a problem much at all. I think the backcourt rotation is flowing really, really nicely. So hopefully that answers your question, Sundaris. I appreciate the other one from Farhad. I will probably put together a full mailbag episode here soon. Tomorrow, I will be back in your feed with a recap of the Hawks game, which I will be at live in the new Phoenix Suns Arena, the renovated Phoenix Suns Arena. So catch that show right after the game on Wednesday night. And then hopefully closing out the week with Sam Cooper. I want to do a deep dive on Dario Saric's start to the season and then ping pong back and forth with Sam on some things to close out the week. Thanks as always for listening. This was a fun show. And I will talk to you tomorrow.